Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
I think they do need to make some changes, BT. Yeah. What would you do, though? Because the problem is that nobody is really, you know, the main guys who are hitting. It's not like Boone could just switch and say, you know, well, let's put this guy here. You know, let's move Austin Wells up. He's struggling as well. I mean, are you talking about less playing time potentially for Bellinger? I'm assuming their best lineup would be Rice at DH, right? You can have Rice DH.
Honestly, it's going to sound crazy, but I might run Grisham out there for a little bit against righties.
Well, but that's what I'm saying.
I know he batted first last night.
But I was going to have Grisham in center and Rice as the DH, which would mean Dominguez in left, which would mean Bellinger out. Like, either way, the problem is that with Rice, like, their best players are all in the outfield. The problems right now are offensively second base, third base, shortstop. Catcher.
But basically the entire infield.
But that's what I'm saying. So now you have a logjam, and even with the idea of Stanton coming back to be some kind of a savior, well, that's great. But the problem is when Stanton comes back, one of the other guys is going to be out. You can't have Grisham, Judge, Bellinger, Dominguez, Rice, and Stanton all in the same.
There's no chance you could have that. It's impossible.
You can't even have,
unless you start catching Rice a little bit, which has been floated out there. But that's not going to happen. Doesn't seem like it is.
So, point is, they have a problem. What would you do here with this Yankee lineup? Are you playing Grisham every day until he cools off?
I mean, why wouldn't you run him out there? I mean, maybe a tough lefty.
All right, then who's going to sit?
I mean, Ben Rice has cooled off a little bit here.
But still, if Ben, I know he's cooled off a little bit, but he's been one of their better offensive players.
He definitely has. Listen, you have to run Bellinger out there. You're not going to
see him. What about Dominguez?
I mean, I think maybe you go a little bit more platoon-based with Dominguez, which they've kind of done a little anyway.
Think about
this, though. But Dominguez hitting .315 against righties from the left side. He's you know, pretty woeful for the right side. So it's easy to justify sitting Dominguez against a righty. Against a lefty. Yeah, so that solves that for now.
Okay, so fair enough, but still, Rice, you want Rice in that lineup?
I do, definitely.
You want Grisham in center, Bellinger, Judge in the outfield, then it would be a Rice-Dominguez platoon, which is not great because you're still Dominguez against...
Well, because they're both good from the left side, so it's kind of neutralizing the other. I know what you're saying.
I mean, okay, so even if, let's say, forget Rice for a second, you bring Stanton back, and then you have Dominguez, Stanton, platoon, DH, okay, fine. One righty, one lefty. Or one's better against righty pitching, one's better against lefty pitching. Still doesn't get Rice in the lineup. You want to get Rice in that lineup. Then you have to have Dominguez in the outfield, and then you have to sit either Bellinger or Grisham. You can't put Bellinger at first because you got Goldschmidt, who's one of your best players. Their best offensive players all play the same positions, so you're kind of stuck with, and one of them is Bellinger, who is struggling, one of the outfielders, but you need to go with him because he's supposed to be one of your main guys. But Jazz, Volpe, Wells, Peraza, like that's where the Yankees, they have major issues with that lineup.
Yeah, which is why I didn't love them coming in. I mean, every time we talk about the Yankees and this comes up, I'm like, no, I mean, I'm not really surprised here.
But what do you do to fix it?
Here's the first thing I'm going to do. Now, it's probably a little tough to do this during the season. This is more an off-season thing. I'm getting Ben Rice at third baseman, Smith. Learn how to play third base, dude.
I mean,
learn how to play third base.
I know, but now
you're
going to
hit more than DJ. You're going to hit more than Cabrera, and neither one is Greg Nettles or Brooks Robinson at third base with the leather. So, I mean, if Ben Rice could, if he, now I'm not saying he was a great catcher, but if you have at the lowest level, which I would have to think he has, even though he doesn't catch at the major league level, just an average like receiving skill set as a catcher, like literally behind the plate. I think if you have a willingness to keep a ball in front of you with a decent arm, which I think Ben Rice does, I think you could be an adequate third baseman. I'm trying to think outside the box because to your point,
you have no.
Otherwise, I'm going to sit here and say there's no solution. Right. So I'm going to come up with a solution.
Cabrera's been a major problem in the field as well. I know offensively he's okay.
Yeah, I know. I air mail it the other day.
Everything. Yeah, he's been a butcher in the field.
I know. Listen, I do think that there's a big difference. While they're all struggling, like Jazz, we talked about that in the first hour, Volpe. They are whiff machines. I mean, Jazz is striking out 33.5% of the time. 33.5% of the time. That is his strikeout rate. That is gross.
How about simple solution for now? Okay, let's ask it this way. What would you do with Bellinger?
I got to keep playing him.
In front of Judge? Where would you put him in the lineup? Behind Judge? In front of Judge?
I would try to ride the wave of Judge behind him to get him going.
Right. You have to. I would probably do the same thing. Then how would you break up, if you do that,
how do I break up Jazz and Volpe?
Because that's important,
I've got an answer for you.
Well, are they going to have a lefty that goes in between Judge and Goldschmidt in your scenario?
Yeah, and that lefty, to me, it still should be Wells. See, here's the thing. I watch Volpe, and I hate his approach. I watch Jazz, I can't stand his approach.
I watch
Austin Wells. I know he's hitting 220-something, whatever. He's off to a slow start, even weird because he went yard on opening day. Which I thought was going to portend big things, and I still think he's going to be a plus stick. I have no doubt about that. But even when he's in a funk, at least he's grinding. It's not a threat. It's not strike one, strike two, good night, sit down. It's foul ball. Now, he still misses some balls up in the zone. I don't know why. That's the Yankees. They got to figure that out. But his eye is much more discerning than Jazz and Volpe. I think he's a good base runner, not fast, but a smart runner. I just trust him. Like, I don't want Jazz and Volpe up right now, two on, two out in the eighth or the ninth inning against a good bullpen arm, and the Yankees down a run. I would rather have Austin Wells. I really would.
I'm with you on that. So that's at least one potential solution there. Use Wells to break them up, but then you have Wells in front of Goldschmidt, and then you have to figure out, you know, then I probably have Dominguez, the lefty, behind Goldschmidt.
I'm putting Volpe ninth.
Yeah, I would move Jazz down. The infatuation with Jazz, to me, does not make any sense. And him and Volpe back-to-back, that just can't continue to happen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey, everyone. Summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high-quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
The Yankees lose the first game 4-3 to Baltimore in the first game of the series, a Baltimore team that has really struggled this year, both offensively and pitching-wise. And Sugano, who really hasn't struck out, guys, the Japanese pitcher who came over here, he's like 36 years old. He won the MVP in Japan last year, has been okay. He's pitching to a 3 ERA now, but he hasn't struck a lot of guys out, and he struck out 8 Yankees in 5 innings. Now, watching the game, I actually thought he threw the ball really well, but the Yankee lineup has a problem. And I typically don't get too invested in the lineup construction. I think it's a bit overdone. Not that it's meaningless or that there aren't things that I prefer or make sense, but sometimes people get really hung up on who hits where, and I think for the most part it's overrated. But we're getting to a point now where if you're watching the games, the at-bats that Bellinger and Jazz are giving you. Now, Bellinger does get a hit early in the game with Judge on the move, and it sets up runners at the corners that they, of course, do not cash in on. But at the end of the game, like the at-bat from Bellinger, and we are seeing this a lot, and I've been giving him the benefit of the doubt. One, Bellinger, obviously coming over to the Yankees, his father played for the team. He's had one of the more up and down careers of recent times. Like, I don't know if you could find another up and down MVP, not good enough to stick with the Dodgers, excellent season with the Cubs, average season with the Cubs. He has been all over the place. He's been a great player. He's been a terrible player. He's been a slightly above average player. And now he's coming to the New York Yankees. His father played here. He's killing it in spring, and then he has a back issue out in Detroit. It's still cold weather. It's only a month. I've been trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, but if you watch him, he is consistently getting beat on fastballs. We talk about this with Volpe, too, who hopefully is turning it around now with his fourth consecutive game with an extra base hit. But Bellinger is getting beat with fastballs consistently, and I know that Tiki apparently has been keeping a track of what he does hitting behind Judge every time Judge gets walked. He has been terrible in protecting Judge. And you watch this game, and they continue to do it. And I know the Yankees love this lefty-righty, lefty-righty. And for years, they were all right-handed and had no ability to do it. So this team has really too many left-handed hitters, and they don't have enough right-handed hitters, right? They're two switch hitters in Cabrera at third, and obviously Dominguez in left. Both of them are atrocious right-handed hitters and far better left-handed hitters. So against left-handed pitching, they have a real problem. And we've already seen every team use every left-handed reliever they could possibly use in any situation to pitch to the New York Yankees. And I like the idea of balance. And I like the idea, and during that time when they had all right-handed hitters, we talked about this a lot. And I remember David Cohn talking about this a lot, about you want to give just pitchers different looks. And you want to give, have to face this type of guy and then that. Like, I get it. You want to have to go back and forth. And then obviously the main reason you do it is for relievers, and you don't get a reliever to come in as a right-handed reliever and be able to face three or four right-handed hitters in a row, or vice versa. Left-handed reliever come in and face three lefties in a row. You want to mix it up and make sure that they have to face their opposite arm. And that makes sense. And I'm into it. And In a perfect world, that's exactly what should be going on. But right now, Bellinger does not deserve to be hitting third on this team right now. I mean, that's just the plain simple truth of it. And if they've moved Devin Williams out of the closer role and they pitched him last night in the eighth inning of a tight game, you know, in the, you know, down a run in the eighth inning, which is, you know, you want to keep that at one run, and thankfully he did and had probably his most crisp and clean inning he's had all year. And we'll get to that in a second. But my main issue when I look, Bellinger is hitting 194. 194. And if you look at the lineup last night, and I think Grisham has to stay in the lineup. He made a poor play defensively, misread a ball in center field, cost them a run, which in a game they lost by one run, which sucks. But you know how great he is defensively, and he's been hitting. And just listen to the first five hitters. Then we get to Jazz as well. Listen to the first five hitters of the New York Yankees. Grisham's hitting 306. Now, I know it's April and it's limited at bats. Grisham hitting 306. Judge is still hitting 405. He's hitting better than 400. Bellinger, 194. Goldschmidt, 361. Jazz, 173. Like, but specifically the top four. What's killing them right there? 306, 405, 194, 361. I know we want lefty-righty, lefty-righty. But at some point, you've got to put your better hitters up front. We are, I mean, he's just, Bellinger is in a funk. I don't think Bellinger sucks. I don't think Bellinger's done. I don't think, you know, we're never going to see a good Bellinger. He's terrible. What another terrible trade from the all-wise, all-powerful, all-knowing, terrible Brian Cashman. I get it. I think he's going to turn it around and be what he typically has been over the last handful of years, an average to above-average baseball player. But right now, he's hitting 190. We can't continue to put him in arguably the most impactful, important part of the lineup day after day in the guise of keeping it lefty-righty. And even if you are desperate to do that, like right now, over the last handful of games, we've seen better at-bats from Wells. Last year, the offense changed when Wells hit cleanup behind Judge. When he emerged in the second half of last year as a legitimate offensive threat and they moved him to cleanup, it kind of really changed the lineup. And right now, look, they still have the second most runs scored in baseball. They still have, I think they're tied for the most home runs in baseball. This is an offense that has been successful to start the year. But I can't continue to watch Bellinger, and then Jazz is another one. Jazz, I talked about this the other night. I don't know if all or nothing is right, and I don't know if it's nothing but home run swings or type A swings, whatever you want to call it. But Jazz, again yesterday, strikes out three times. He is striking out at an ungodly rate. This is not the kind of hitter that the Yankees need from Jazz. Yes, you want power from everyone. Right, home runs win games. I'm a big home run guy. I always talk about every time someone says, you know, the home runs disappear in the postseason. I go, no, they don't, dope. You got to hit home runs in the postseason. And overall, in a Yankee uniform, Jazz has been pretty damn good. But right now, he is having miserable, non-competitive, ugly at-bats, swinging through fastballs, taking fastballs down the middle. Same thing with Bellinger in the ninth inning of this game. Gets ahead 3-0. And now Batista throws 97-98. I get it. But, you know, to quote the great Mike Francesa, bink, bink, boom. Three fastballs right down the heart of the plate. And he fouls one off. And then he swings right through one. He takes one 3-0, fouls one off, swings right through a fastball a little bit up in the zone. You can't get beat by three straight fastballs in three straight fastball counts. Like, that can't happen. He's in a major funk, and Jazz too, and right now they are killing them, and the Yankees love this lefty-righty thing, and I get it, but they have to change the lineup. They have to move these guys down and play the hot hand. Like, especially left-handed hitting, put Dominguez up there. He's been better left-handed. His numbers are far better left-handed than Bellinger. Against a right-handed pitcher, put Dominguez third or fifth over Jazz. I understand you want to give these guys, and we talk about this a lot when the Yankees had all these different lineups. Like, we're never happy. This is why I always laugh. Oh, that's why I kind of laugh at roster and lineup construction sometimes. Because you can't win. All that matters is you want the run scored. And when they're not scoring runs and they're making changes, well, you're making too many changes. And then when they're not scoring runs or struggling at times and they don't move guys, well, you got to move the guys. And that's why I really had no problem with the changes. But right now, Bellinger and Jazz have been awful. They're not making contact. They're hitting under 200. They're not making productive outs. And Bellinger is starting to scare me because he's not driving the baseball either. His slugging percentage is .312. Again, he had a back issue. It was cold. I'll give him a break. He's coming over to a new team. I'll give him a break for a time. But while I'm giving him a break, he can hit sixth or seventh. Like, it's not the end of the world to put him down a little bit and play the hotter hands. Right now, Volpe's swinging a better bat. Move Volpe up. Right now, Wells is swinging the better bat. Move Wells up. Against right-handed pitching, for sure, Dominguez is swinging a better bat. Move him up. Like, there are too many strikeouts in the middle of the order. And both of those guys, we talk about what made this lineup exciting to me at the start of the year, is the athleticism. And you can't run if you're not on base. And you can't run if you don't put the ball in play. And if you look at some of the numbers, they actually are a far better base running team this year already. They're like top 10 in first to third. Like, they run the bases better. With some other obvious examples that will jump out at you. Defensively, they're far better. Jazz made an incredible dive and catch. They said on the broadcast he's top three in defensive run saves in baseball already. Like, he's an excellent fielder. They're really good up the middle. Volpe's great. They're younger. They're more athletic. They can create havoc on the base paths, but we're not seeing it because they're striking out so much. They both need to change the way they're going. Like, especially Jazz. Jazz needs to change. This is a guy who came into the season talking MVP, talking having the best year of his career, talking about, you know, I think tongue-in-cheek, talking about keeping up with Judge and the home run numbers. But he has got to put the ball in play. He has got to use his legs. He's got to get on base. He's got to steal bases. He's got to create havoc on the base path. That's the game. That's the way the Yankees can attack these teams. And I still, you know, but until they find their way, we can't just keep hitting them third and fifth. Not at 100. It's going to turn into May. And they're killing rallies.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hoff hit me with something that definitely challenges my math skills. And even as I plotted through it, it's honestly one of the more fascinating things that I think he's ever asked on the show. And I don't know my answer. So I'm going to present it to you. And it's about Judge and it's about Alonso. So right now, Pete, who got a base hit his first time up, right? But based on entering the game. Enter the game hitting .343. Aaron Judge enters, actually off today, is hitting .427. So the way Pete framed it, at the end of the year, which player is closer to their current average? Okay. So I'm like, it just seemed like it took me a while to even find. I'm like, well, close, all right, I got you. Definitely took me a second to get it. And let's see. Well, Judge, who's hitting .427, if he were to finish it, say, .360, I picked an arbitrary number, .360, boom. That's 67 points off of where he's at now, .427. And Pete, you know, I'm going to adjust based on past performances, based on overall talent, whatever. Pete at 343, I just picked 280. Even though he maybe could be a tick higher, but 280 for him would be, what, something like 67 points off the mark, I think. 67 or 63, whatever it is. It's in the neighborhood between 65 and 70 for each guy. So do I think, basically what it comes down to simplify this out, do I think it's going to be Judge hitting 360 or Pete hitting 280? Now, Pete could hit 290 and Judge could hit 373. I don't know. First, let me let you answer it since you posed the question. What is your opinion right now? Which player will finish closer to their current average, which are off the charts?
I think, personally speaking, Pete will be close to it because they're still going to drop about 100 points. Like, the Judge last year hit 322, which was phenomenal. He's batting 427. Like, even if he drops off, like, 75 points, it's going to be... Because I don't think he's going to bat 350. I don't think he's going to bat 340. I think he's going to significantly drop down. We were talking about it. If he has a bad streak of over 30.
Over 30, I ask you right to calculate this.
Pete Alonso, I don't think he's going to get 280. Or 280 to me is way too high for him. But I think he'll be closer to the 260 mark. So I think they're both going to fall off closer to 100 points, closer to it.
Uh-huh.
And I think at the end of the day, it's just 260 is less than the 320. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think Judge has an opportunity to be great. I think he's going to come closer to dropping off closer to 100 points from here.
I see how you got there. I would go the other way. I don't agree with either. I think that Pete has a chance to be higher than that. And I think really... Aaron has a chance where we look back, it's going to be like one of those freak shows where you go to Baseball Reference and you see like 359 staring at you, 363. I mean, the one thing about, listen, we talk about Judge and we know his approach and he's refined it over the years, you know, 322 a year ago, whatever it was. So it's not like this is out of nowhere, but Pete Alonso's changed his approach too. And I was listening to Keith talk about this last night where, you know, he's usually 2-1. Two to one strikeouts to walks. He's 1-1. I think he's like one more walk or one more strikeout than the other, which is not Pete Alonso. Now you can very easily say, well, that's all right, maybe it's a bit of an outlier start. I don't think it is because of the where he's hitting the ball, the way he's taking some tough, you know, some of that soft stuff away that he used to go at. Like he just looks like he's changed his approach. And it looks like it's more in line with how he used to hit when he had a 270 to 260.
I got to be honest, and I'm not comparing him to David Wright at all, but it reminds me of the when David Wright used to get in his first year or second year, he was the best 0-2 hitter in baseball. If he got an 0-2 pitch on him, he'd find a way to work the count and either get a base hit or get a walk, whatever it is. Alonso is much closer to that these days because, like yesterday, he walked a 3-2 pitch. They're throwing him that cheese outside. They're throwing him stuff that he would chase last year.
Yep.
He's not touching it. He's not even close to touching it.
Well, that's why I say, and again, I know I like to get some like deep in the numbers sometimes. Sometimes it's boring for some people. But that's why I said the way he's taken pitches this year.
Right.
Like, you want to see a good hitter? Watch how he takes a pitch. There's no flinch. There's no jump. Like, he's seeing it early, and he's reading it early. So, my answer is Judge, but it could be close.
Can I just say one thing? Because, sure. Again, I've heard people now reference Judge and Barry Bonds.
What is it? Who's eating? I smell food all of a sudden. What's going on?
I don't know, but our door is wide open. Yours is closed, so you shouldn't smell it. So
I do, though.
It's through the vent.
Oh, got it.
Through the vent.
It's not Dove Stew. He didn't open it up yet.
All right. What are you going to say, Hop?
Next break.
But Barry Bonds... At age 37, hit his highest batting average, which was 370. The year prior, he was 328. Is this people saying that Aaron Judge is on that Barry Bonds type of year right now?
Yep.
I mean, if that's the case, then we're talking about that jump where 322 to 370 isn't that much.
I don't think it's that much. Now, the only thing is, what did Bonds, how many home runs did he have that year?
That was 46, 110, and I forgot how many walks he had.
Oh, yeah, no, Aaron's healthy. Aaron's flying by certainly 46 and certainly 110.
The year before he batted 328, he had 73 home runs.
Yeah, that's what he's a Judge. He's, you know, listen, 10's amazing, but yeah, he's not hitting 73 home runs. So, you know, he's learned. He's one of these guys who's gotten better later in his career in terms of, like, I mean, some guys come out and they flash crazy power, like a young Darryl. But Darryl never really refined his approach. He was always, you know, 250, 260, and like that kind of average around there. But this is not like out of nowhere for Judge. He's been this kind of hitter for a while. Kevin's in West Islip. Kev, BT and Sal, how you doing?
Hey, Brandon. How you doing, pal?
Good. What's going on?
Just real quick, I just wanted to shout out that I actually, when I first listened to you about 4 or 5 years ago, wasn't really thrilled. But you've really grown on me, like both with your sports knowledge, your passion, and your takes. Like I got to give you props for that. You're really cool,
that.
Dude.
Thank you, man. That's cool. You know what? Listen, you know why I think that's really cool? First of all, and there's a lot of people who disagree, and that's fine. But like, yeah, so like, I think the easiest thing is like when somebody likes you from the get go, and that's awesome. But when somebody's like, nah, I don't like this dude, but then you stick with it and you give it a shot, that's what means. That really means a lot. So thanks for saying that, man.
No problem. You and I gotta tell you, I'd love to see you paired up with Keith. By the way,
I got a partner.
Well, I don't want to talk about him right now. I'm not gonna go there.
Keep it moving.
Keep the call positive. So listen. I think it's really simple. Everybody's like, nobody's looking at the elephant in the room with Soto. Now, I'm not a Mets fan. I'm not a Yankee fan. I'm actually a Reds fan, but more of both a Mets and Yankee fan, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at this, as Evan would say, an independent objective observer, whatever he calls it.
Yeah, what is that acronym? I've heard him say. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So Soto has always, always been about the money. Always. Mm-hmm. He's got his money. Yeah. He's complacent. That's it. It's not about the Bronx. It's not about Citi Field. Not about the teammates. Not about nothing. Now, I'm not saying that's the answer, but why is nobody thinking that's the answer? I don't get it.
Well, number one, I think we have too much respect for the way he attacks his craft over the years. Like, if there wasn't evidence that he was just, you know, a real tactician in the box and a real, really, like, deeply into the mind games of hitting, the psychology of hitting. Like, everything about Soto, to me, from a distance, obviously, tells me that this guy opens his eyes and he's thinking about hitting. His approach, refining it, perfecting it. And that doesn't flip off. Like, I think this guy's motivation is to be a great hitter. I also think he's deeply motivated to be a better right fielder. I mean, he's talked about that. I mean, I haven't seen it yet this year. I don't know if we will. But, I'm not going there. I mean, not because I'm afraid to. I just don't believe it. I think there's some guys that you can say that about. No question. I don't think he's one of them. I really, really don't.
I feel pretty confident about where the Yankees are right now at 18-12 with an opportunity to go 19-12. But the story for this game for me is the six perfect innings from Carlos Rodon. And I've been critical of him as much as anybody else has. And I still will tell you, in a big game, in the back of my mind, there will always be a fear of him blowing it or not being able to overcome any sort of controversy, or once the ball starts rolling in the wrong direction, he can't deal with it and he'll have his blow-up inning, which he typically does. But, and I know how much money he makes, but let's be fair. In the last 20 starts since July 14th of last year, Carlos Rodon has a 3.16 ERA and he struck out 11 per 9. Like, Carlos Rodon has been, and get ready because I'm going to use the word, a great starting pitcher for the New York Yankees. Flat out. He's been really, really good. Over the course of the season, they need him to step up in the regular season. I understand that we're still concerned about him as your game two starter in a series, in a playoff series, as am I. But if you look at what he's done over the last 2 years as just a guy in the rotation that you need to count on every fifth day, for the most part, Carlos Rodon has been really, really good. Really good. And this year, he is throwing the ball great. And he has been a huge positive for this team. Without Luis Gil, and we're waiting for him, and without Gerrit Cole all year, Carlos Rodon was going to be important. And outside of like two innings since opening day, Carlos Rodon has been there for the New York Yankees. He was excellent again today. He has been terrific. And we can knock him. In fact, no, you can't knock him. Actually, you can't. You can't knock him. You can question him. You can have concerns. And you can wonder if he'll be there in the biggest of moments. That is still fair. But for every fifth day over the course of a regular season, which you have to make the playoffs, and with the rotation they have now with Carlos Carrasco, has actually been pretty good, but you're not worried about every single time Carlos Carrasco hits the mound. Will Warren, who's been good start, terrible start, good start, terrible start. Like, with that being the guys in the rotation waiting for, you know, the great pitchers to come back, or, you know, waiting for the great Marcus Stroman to rejoin the rotation. Like, he has been a pivotal part of this team. And you have to be fair, Yankee fans. You have to be fair. Carlos Rodon hasn't just been good. He's been great. He has been absolutely a number two to Max Fried, who's been brilliant. And that is what saves the starting rotation. Right now, you can count on the top two guys. You can. To say you can't count on Rodon is unfair on what he's given you this year. It's unfair to say that. He's been great. Now, in the big game, I will always worry until he proves it. But over the course of the regular season, in a Yankee uniform the last 2 years, now the year one, I'll give you, injured half the year, miserable the other half. Can't argue it, just an atrocious first season. But these last two seasons, in the regular season, every fifth day, Carlos Rodon has earned his paycheck. Carlos Rodon has been a very good starting pitcher for this Yankee team. And he continues now three straight starts of dominance. Not just solid, not just, hey, he figured out a way not to blow the game. Dominance. And really, other than a mistake here, the two big mistakes that he made, the three-run home run against Pittsburgh and the game against San Francisco where he gave up the two home runs to Kim, and specifically that second one that broke their back when they had a lead. Other than those two innings, he hasn't just been good, he's been dominant. And it's time to at least start to give him a break. We can always question him because he hasn't proven it in the biggest of moments. And that's what it's about, and I get that. But with the state of the Yankee rotation, he has been a godsend. There's no other way to put it. You have to be fair. He's been great. And he was brilliant again. And now it's three consecutive dominant starts. And outside of two innings, and maybe the second game of the year, we have seen almost 90% of Carlos Rodon's pitching this year not just be good, but be dominant. Dominant. It's time to get off his back.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
He's homered. Derek Jeter homers to tie the game. And there it is. Hit number 3,000.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Wakanda. Welcome.
The Big Shot of the Night is brought to you by WFAN and me, Keith McPherson. Bright lights, big city. We got a bunch of big shots in New York. But down in Camden Yards, I got to give the Big Shot of the Night to Ben Arroz, Benny Blanco Arroz, Ben Rice. He's nice. So nice. We had to say it twice with the deuce deuce on him. Number 22 for your New York Yankees. Hit two homers today. Wish I bet that. This guy goes out there and he has another hit. So three hits, four runs, two RBI. Ben Rice, looking like an all-star. 888-808-1019. Good to have him. As much as I was saying, and I think Big Mac was saying, and BT and any other Yankee fans on Yankee Twitter going into the season, we need a bat, we need a bat, we need another bat, we need another bat. We were not thinking that Ben Rice would be this bat. We were damn sure not thinking that Trent Grisham would bring his bat. Good. So, you know, talking about the Yankees And going back to the phone, Jazz, hopefully Jazz is all right and can bounce back. Maybe if he's got to take off this game and then be available Friday for Jazz Chisholm Jr. basketball jersey night. 46,000 people pulled up for the hockey jersey. And I remember last year for the Juan Soto basketball jersey, I was like, I don't think I've ever seen more people outside the stadium for a giveaway than like, because a bobblehead, a lot of people aren't into bobbleheads. I got to clean out my storage unit this month, and there's probably 40 bobbleheads in there. But for the jersey, a basketball jersey, everybody's going to be there for the basketball jersey. It's supposed to be hot, and it might rain, but it's supposed to be 82 on Friday. So that's going to be one of those movies. That's going to be a situation. All right, to the phone we go. Honorable mention I give to Carlos Rodon, too, because there was a while where I was like, this guy's pitching in a perfect game. And then even when he had the first, walk, I'm like, he's still got a no-no going. And then, obviously, Jorge Lopez doubled off the wall. And I'm like, well, so much for that, Rodon. How will you respond? How will you respond to this? And then you guys know what happened. Matt is in Massapequa on the Fan. What's up, Matt?
Keith, thanks for taking my call, bro. What's up?
You know, getting to the Yankee conversation finally.
Yeah. Before I get to my point, you had mentioned you had a bad beat. But I got to say, I think I got you beat there. Last year, I had Malachi Corley, first-time touchdown scorer on that Thursday night football game.
I would hate
back
him.
Back in October, November.
I would hate him for the rest of the line.
Yeah. That was $10 to win $2,000.
Idiot. Drops the ball before he scores his own touchdown.
That cost you two grand.
Wow.
I was out with family. I had to maintain my composure. I don't know. I would delete
the app after that. I would if you were on that night, I would probably that would make me quit gambling for at least a couple weeks.
It was brutal. So I called because I like the optimism, but I think Rodon's a fraud. I'm a Yankee fan, and I'm generally a very optimistic person, but I played baseball my whole life. This guy's face has, after the slightest bit of adversity in a pressure situation, is awful. And he just seems to unravel, and he just doesn't have the stones to play here. If Cash doesn't get aggressive at the deadline and actually stop prospect hugging and get the best available ace on the market for the first time in God knows when, we just have no shot to win the World Series, and it's going to be Max Fried and company. The lineup is good enough to win, but if they don't have a solid foundation of a rotation, you might as well just stop caring about it.
Hey, I'm with you, bro. Because like Rodon is not my game two starter. I can't do that. I can't go through last year again. I don't believe in him as far as like thinking he's completely figured out. But he has turned a corner, and we need him. Not just for this year with Cole down, but like this is his third year of a 6-year deal. He is a starting pitcher on this team in Aaron Judge's prime. Like we need him to be what we're paying him to be. Like this guy can't fold. He can't. I don't know. He's got to be solid. But not. I'm with you. I always say he's more bark than bite. He's a fake tough guy.
Yeah,
fake bulldog.
I mean,
like he's not like that.
Three games is promising of a sub one ERA, but we got to see more consistency out of this guy. I mean, he's making a lot of money.
Yeah, and not for nothing, he's facing a struggling Orioles team who hasn't hit left-handed pitchers all year. That's what he was supposed to do tonight. So, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call, brother.
Thanks for the call, Matt. 888-808-1019. I'm not a Rodon guy. I'm a Yankee guy. I root for the laundry. I am rooting for him. Even though I don't believe in him, every time he takes that ball, I am rooting for him to succeed. As he was getting through those innings tonight, I was hoping I was sitting there watching a perfect game. I even stopped tweeting for a little while because I'm like superstitious about like, do I say anything? Do I just throw some stuff out? Do I keep tweeting? I've said it a bunch about Rodon. Not only do we need him this year, like because of the situation with like, I don't know when Luis Hill is coming back and I don't know what he's going to be. And as Matt was just talking about, you know, Cashman going. I don't expect Cashman to go out and get Sandy Alcantara. I just don't. I don't expect him to go get a top flight starter. Like when we did expect him to go do that in 2022
when we had a team that was going to the ALCS, when we had a team that won 100 games, we were expecting Luis Castillo. We got Frankie Montas. So I'm not getting my hopes up that help is on the way. What I'll get my hopes up around is Carlos Rodon has a .95 ERA in his last three starts. Keep it up. Someone got to him and talked to him about, hey, man, this is pro ball. This is the New York Yankees. Stop unraveling. If your shoe comes untied and you're on the mound, don't freak out. Overcome it. If the wind is blowing too hard, don't lose your cool. If the ball that you throw is a strike, but the dum-dum behind the plate calls it a ball, just know that the ABS system is coming before you retire, and it's going to be okay.
I would consider, if not flat out, just send Dominguez down, not because of what Dominguez has done, but because of, you talk about developing players. He clearly is not ready for a full-time job in the big leagues.
I don't agree with that.
Dominguez?
Sitting 315 as a lefty.
As a lefty. Is he a lefty or is he a righty? Do you think he's fully developed?
No, that's not fully.
Well, that's my point.
But I can't send them down, Sal, when he's shown signs of being a viable man. I think that sends the wrong message.
Why? Well, so are we about messaging or developing players?
We're about both, but the messaging's got to fit the player. Well, like, he has not earned the right to be said. He has not been so substandard.
It's not about that. It's about developing.
I know what you're saying.
It's
about reps here. What I'm saying is, I wish he would have played last night.
Why?
Because he's hitting 315
instead of who?
Well, that's, you know, I get that's the issue.
So it's not me. So again, like, I'm smarter than people think here. Okay. It's not me just saying, well, Dominguez needs to be sent down because he's hitting whatever from the right side. It has nothing to do with Dominguez.
You know, I got you. They got congested outfielders.
Well, they have no infielders. That's number one.
Backups. Yeah.
Number one. Trent Grisham, you can't take him out of the lineup right now.
I hear you.
Bellinger isn't going anywhere.
No.
And you're not taking out Aaron Judge. So
no.
that's like number one. Number two, and this is the primary thing here. The Yankees, and I'd love to see anybody fight me off on this, they have failed to develop players properly. That's a fact, Jack. Look at Anthony Volpe. Look at all the guys that were here that aren't here.
Yeah, we know
all
that.
Of them.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so instead of developing Dominguez properly, like, I think it could be a good thing. I know he's saying you got to worry about the fragile psyche. Okay, well, that's why Boone's got to cater to him in left field because, oh, you got to make sure he gets out on a high note and don't want to have him butcher a game at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's been okay in the outfield, but still not 100% confident with him out there. What's the harm in having a player with great potential? Like, Dominguez is not supposed to be a seven hitter. He's supposed to be an impact bat. What's the harm in sending him down and having him develop into a stud before you bring him back up here? Especially while guys are hot, mainly Grisham, being in center field.
That would hold more weight with me if the roster shouted out, we don't need him right now. They do.
But they didn't even play last night.
No,
they won 15-3.
I know. I would have played him last night. I didn't love that he didn't start last night. That surprised me a little bit there. And I get it. It's a tough juggle for Boone here. You know, you got to ride this Grisham train, see where it goes. But, you know, Jason Dominguez has had, I just want to see how many at-bats he's had. All right. So, yeah, against righties, he's had almost 60 at-bats. He's had roughly half of that against the lefties. So he's been pretty quiet from the right side, as we know.
Right.
He's hitting 321, pardon me, 321 with an .887 OPS from the left side as a lefty hitter. You know, whether it's, whomever it is, like, I just can't justify sending that guy down. If you're saying he's hitting a .190 in totality and he's showing nothing, and I would describe, I think that he's shown some wheels and some better aptitude in left field and certainly some mash ability for the left side, then I could say, well, yeah, he's not doing anything. He's not playing. So let's get him some reps at the minor league level. I just think that it's fundamentally wrong when somebody does what you ask them to do. He earned the job at a spring training from a hitting perspective. He's cleaned up his defensive miscues. He's performed from his power side at a very high level. I cannot look him in the eye and say, all right, young man, go back to the minors, get on a bus. I'm not doing that to him.
So, what are you going to do, bench Grisham?
It's going to be a night-to-night merry-go-round. It's very tough for Boone.
And you think that's good for the development of Jason Dominguez?
I think it's better than sending him down and maybe crushing his morale. I don't know if it's the perfect thing. I'm not saying that.
Crushing his morale. He can't hit from one side of the plate. He's not strong enough in the outfield to make you feel confident.
But he has a bit of problem, Sal. What was the last play he butchered this year? The last play he butchered was it like February 20th.
Is Dominguez supposed to be a fourth outfielder, or was he supposed to be Mickey Mantle?
Well, forget about Mickey Mantle for now, because that's over. Forget about the comparisons. I'm just talking about a player that I watch night to night. I like him, and I want to run him out there in favorable spots.
Right.
Favorable spots based on the stats and based on the eye test or against righties. There's a lot more righties in baseball than lefty, and so I'm going to keep him off the team.
Okay,
and then send the guy down.
And then who's going to be out of the lineup against the righty?
I'm going to take it. Well, I'm going to rotate. Right. Grisham, you know, now, it's tough when he goes yard. I mean, do you sit him tonight? Probably
goes
not.
Goes yard. The guy, he's almost up there with Aaron Judge.
Well, I understand that. Yeah. So I'm going to ride that
straight. Is Grisham better defensively than Dominguez?
He's the best, probably the best on the team.
Correct. He's had more of an impact offensively and a better defender. So you're going to take him out? I wouldn't. That's why I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, but
are you
going to
take Bellinger out?
I mean, I might. I mean, where's the guarantee? Bellinger's got to play. He's at 190.
All right. Well,
now, I'm not going to sit him after he goes yard last night either. I'm not, because, you know, you don't want to do that. Could be the start of a hot streak. Listen, I'm not saying that this is easy. And this is also that the Yankees are very structurally flawed. Like, I don't love the way they're constructed. I've said this. It's one of the reasons, although they look a little, like, they look like, I'm starting to get the sense that the Yankees might win more games than I thought they would. I thought like 90, 91. I think they might be mid-90s when it's all said and done. You get Luis Gil back when he comes back, which will probably be mid-July. But I just think it's a lot for the manager to juggle. I don't think there's no infield, but there's no backup infielders that I think are good.
Right.
And there's kind of a mishmash in the outfield with some superstars and some unknowns and a little bit in between. So I think that Boone's done a pretty good job juggling, but I would have played Dominguez last night, and no way am I sending him down.
And that's why I would send him down, is because you don't need him right now. I think the development of him is more important. They keep screwing the development of their young players up. Volpe is one of them. Oh, okay, you don't want to send him down years ago. It's year three. Volpe is getting worse. He hasn't been the player that they thought he was going to be. I don't want to ruin Dominguez. I want to get him as strong as possible so when he comes up, he is the guy. Hey, we're not messing with Dominguez. He's our left fielder, wherever they want to put him in the center field, whatever it may be. That's it. We're leaving him alone, and now you know he's there the majority of the time. Well, right now, I don't think you could say that. They're easing him in. I personally would send him down and further develop him.
You see, like I think when you talk, late. We got a break here.
Yes.
Told you we should talk baseball early. Yeah, we had a lot to say, man. I would just say that, like, retarding the development and the confidence of a young player who's not scuffling, to me, that's overthinking it. Now, I do get the value of getting up four times every night, whether it's AAA, AA, or here. I like Lombard, I get that, high A, understood. But he's not overwhelmed, and he is producing. He's got to stay. They're not going to send him down.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now, and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and, like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because, like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.